Hey, everybody, before we start today's episode, we wanted to let you know about something special. We have unveiled our very first Game Nights-themed playmat.
We're calling it Last Stand, featuring the amazing art of Titus Lunter. It is up on Kickstarter right now. We're shipping internationally and domestically. We have signed versions available as well. And guess what? You only have until the end of this Kickstarter campaign to get this playmat. And at that point, you're never going to be able to get it again once it's over.
Yeah, this thing is beautiful. You really want to get your hands on it. If you're a fan of Game Nights, it's really a piece of history because it's our first Game Nights-themed playmat. So again, when that timer runs out, you will never be able to get this playmat again. So head on over to Kickstarter. All of the links are in the show notes in the more info box below the video.
All right, on to the episode.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone. Your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Joda, Joda, pirates life for me.
Drink up me hearty yo-ho.
Drink up me hearty yo-ho. Joda, Joda,
the archmage life for me.
Actually worked on a bunch of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah, so you've probably heard that song a lot.
Yeah, you'd think I know the words, but I don't.
Nope. Hello, everybody. How are you doing today? My name is Jimmy Wong. You are watching and listening to the Command Zone podcast.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we are now on week two of the Brawl deck text. That's right. We're spending some time to jump into Brawl. Have you seen the latest Game Nights? We are now assuming that you have because we're 2 weeks away from it. So we're going to reference some of the stuff that's going to happen in that episode. But if you haven't seen it, make sure you go and watch it right now. Then come back to this episode to find out why Joda, Archmage Eternal, is an incredibly broken and powerful card.
Jimmy, you had one of the most insane turn fives that I've seen counting Commander. Now, and I mean even counting like crazy Hermit Druid wins. Because the Hermit Druid win is kind of boring, right? It just like mills itself, Necrotic Ooze, I get it, you win. This was insane on a level that you just wouldn't expect from this format.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about Brawl, 60-card deck, standard-only legal cards, and Joda happens to just be the prince of making big stuff happen.
Oh, man, I just realized the last episode we talked about Brawl and we didn't even define what the format is. Let's do that really quickly here. So in case you don't know, Brawl is basically standard Commander. So it's 60-card singleton, can only have one of each card except for basic lands. You can only use standard legal cards. So right now it's Kaladesh, Aether Revolt, Amonkhet, Hour of Devastation, Rivals of Ixalan, and Dominaria.
And the intro decks.
So
Shivan Dragon is legal.
Oh, sweet. I did not know that.
Yeah, I think it's always been legal in standard whenever they have the intro decks because it's part of...
Okay. You start with 30 life. Not 40. There's no commander damage, and Planeswalkers can be your commander.
Yep.
Okay. Those are the rules.
But you're still better off with a creature. And if you want to play Brawl and you want to buy some of those cards, you should head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. They are our sponsor for the show. You're going to be able to find every single card that you need. And because it's in standard, you're not paying exorbitant prices for anything. Well, for the most part.
For some of the standard stuff, you might be.
For sure. But you're not being affected by like this card, like Food Chain, just doesn't exist anymore.
True. Reserve list doesn't hit you.
Yeah, exactly. So make sure you go over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You're directly supporting the show by doing that.
And while you're there, you should pick up some stuff from our other sponsor, which is Ultra Pro. I saw Card Kingdom just tweeted out about the new 100 packs of sleeves for the Eclipse sleeves, which has been a real big boon to our community because we make 100 card decks normally. Now, today we're talking about 60 card decks, but I know a lot of people out there wanted the packs of 100 because it was annoying. They were coming in packs of 80. You had to buy like five of them to get even amounts for your 100 card decks. Now, don't have to worry about it. 100 card packs are here. So the final way to support the show is to go and directly contribute to us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/commandzone, man, our patrons are the best. They really keep the lights on around here. And they get to access our Discord server, and also they can sort of private message us on Patreon. They also get their own place to sort of post comments and talk to us, and we always try to respond to all of our patrons, of course, because you guys are our biggest supporters. In fact, we call out one of those big supporters every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Jonathan Welch.
Jonathan, you rock.
Rock, you do.
Yes, you do.
Yoda.
All right, Joda, Archmage Eternal, let's just get right into
it's Yoda.
Yoda. Yeah, that's right. What was it? Haleva?
Yeah, see?
Yeah, there you go. Yoda, Archmage Eternal. Or is it Archmage? I still don't know. Let's read this card. Yoda costs one blue, red, and a white. So that's Jeskai, 4 mana total, for a 4/3 legendary creature human wizard with flying. And all his text says is you may pay white, blue, black, red, green rather than pay the mana cost for spells that you cast. So if Yoda is on the battlefield, every single card in your hand could cost Wooburg 5 mana.
Yep. It doesn't have to. If it costs less, obviously you can pay less.
Yeah, exactly.
But you could cast a 13 mana spell for Wooburg if you happen to have that spell. It wouldn't be legal in Brawl, but still.
No. You're trying to cast the biggest whoppers that you can, though, in Standard right now when you play this deck.
What do we always say? Cheating of mana costs, yep, among the most powerful things that you can do in Magic. That's all that Yoda does. Yoda.
Yoda. Yoda presents some very unique problems and issues in a format like Brawl because, again, only the cards that are legal in Standard are working here now, which means you don't have access to fetch lands, shock lands, dual lands, and basically mana fixing to the degree.
Signets,
yeah. A lot of different things. And so essentially it's asking yourself, can I actually build a five-color deck? How much of my deck needs to be dedicated just to doing that specifically? And how do I make this thing not fall flat on its face? Because you need to have Jeskai in the first four turns to cast this guy, but you also need to have green because that's how you're going to ramp your way and get your lands fixed. So,
and you need black to round it out and actually use the ability.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was the thing when I saw Yoda the first time, which was, I don't know if this limited card pool can support a mana base that's going to allow me to consistently, you know, have Wooburg available to me on turn 5 or 6.
And to be honest, it may actually still not. This deck, I think, has a really high risk rate because if you just don't draw the cards you need to ramp, you need a specific combination every single time, and you're going to have not a great percentage chance of doing it, to be honest.
No, I actually think it's better than you think. You know, having faced the deck a few times, it feels like Wooburg kind of gets there, and sometimes it's turn 6.
Yeah. It's just awkward, and that's the last thing you want.
When it doesn't, though, it's in bad shape.
Yeah, it's in real bad shape to the point where you just are sometimes looking at a group of 4 or 5 cards you can't actually play.
I mean, they just cost 8 mana or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, well, you in 3 turns I can do it.
So there's a lot of stuff to talk about here, especially in terms of the mana base, but we'll address that at the very end of the episode. Let's just talk about first what cards in this deck are worth it. So the
I
big
like how
gamblers.
You're like, I'm starting with the big stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
that's kind of the fun thing about the deck, right?
That's why you play this deck, is so that you can drop these cards as early as turn 4. Five.
If you cheated out Yoda on 3, you could do it on 4.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it would take a lot, but you definitely could. It's just
you get one of those
specific
2-mana mana dorks and you could do it.
Yeah.
I don't think it even would take that. I mean, you have to get a little lucky, but well, not to name cards that we're going to talk about later, but Channeler Initiator Drover the Mighty would get you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's freaky, because let's talk about some cards that could come out on turn 4.
Yeah. How about my favorite, the one that I think everyone remembers the most from the show, if you watched it? It would be Zakama, Primal Calamity, that makes its appearance once again and is just as terrifying.
Maybe more terrifying.
Yeah, maybe more terrifying. It's a 9/9 that costs 6 red, green, and white. Now, you are obviously not trying to pay 9 mana for this card. You're trying to pay for it with 5 mana with Yoda on the battlefield. And when this dinosaur has Vigilance, Reach, and Trample, the full suite of just being able to stand there and block and attack over everything, when Zakama enters the battlefield, if you cast it, untap all lands you control. So casting it through Yoda still counts as casting this card. You're going to untap every land you have. For 2 in a red, you can have Zakama deal 3 damage to target creature. For 2 in a green, you can destroy target artifact or enchantment. And for 2 in a white, you gain 3 life. So this just has everything you need on it, as well as just being a huge attacker on the ground that's going to be very tough to deal with for most decks in terms of blocking and killing it in traditional means. Removal spell, no problem. But still, the value you get for playing this early is nuts, because then you just have a 9/9 that can just blow up everything it needs to.
Well, and let's also talk about the fact that it untaps all your lands, so you basically play it for free because you play it with Yoda, untap your lands, then play the next big thing out of your hand.
Yeah.
Or, you know, blow stuff up with Zakama, but still. And this is what we saw on game nights, was Jimmy was able to use Zakama to sort of chain together and have an insane, like, sequence of plays that culminated in this guy.
Which seems to be a popular commander for Brawl as well.
It was one of the ones I was considering, and I think you said you were too.
I was considering
because you just have to consider Nicol Bolas. It's the Planeswalker, Nicol Bolas, God Pharaoh, 4, and Grixis, 4 blue, black, and red. So 7 mana total, comes in with 7 loyalty, has 4 abilities. +2 is target opponent exiles cards from the top of his or her library until he or she exiles a non-land card. Until end of turn, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. +1, each opponent exiles 2 cards from his or her hand. Whew. -4, Nicol Bolas deals 7 damage to target opponent or creature an opponent controls. and negative 12 each. Exile each non-land permanent your opponents control. So obviously the ultimate is insanity. Then plus one is actually, I think, the scariest thing about Nicol Bolas, because he goes to 8 loyalty,
mm-hmm.
and everybody exiles 2 cards. If you do that twice, and he goes to 8 loyalty, it's hard to kill him.
Yeah, you just have to hope to draw into it or have enough everyone turn attack this thing at the same
and
time.
And be able to, right? Because you have Joda out, probably, mm-hmm. so that's one blocker. If you get this out on turn 5, which, spoiler alert, Jimmy did, I think that scenario is going to play out very similarly a lot of times, which is you basically stripped our hands because Nicol Bolas basically made it through like 3 or 4 turns.
Yeah, just doing that over and over again. And it's just hard to take down. That much loyalty is a lot.
It's a lot. We were in a situation where Nicol Bolas was just alive for like 3 or 4 turns. Like, yeah. It was brutal.
It's pretty intense. And obviously, it's one of the big payoffs of the deck. And here's the thing, and we'll talk about this later as well. 7 mana isn't that undoable in a deck that has a lot of ramp in it, too. So
yeah.
There are times when you can't just play Joda anymore. You just cast these cards, yeah. Zakama, I think, is by far the top tier, top end. And the next card is in between these two. It's Sandworm Convergence. 6 green, green enchantment. Creatures with flying can't attack you or planeswalkers you control. So, again, important for someone like Nicol Bolas. And at the beginning of your end step, create a 5/5 green worm creature token. So a free 5/5 at every end step, and now flying creatures can't block you anymore, and you're making the best blockers on the ground that you can. Pretty good.
You're going to be very difficult to kill. It's not like the other formats. Limited card pool. There's not as many alternate win conditions.
Yeah.
There's no lab maniacs. There's not, you know, if you start your turn with 40 life or whatever, you win the game. There's just less of that. Not that there's none. There's just less. And then we have noticed there's tends to be a decent amount of board stalls. Sandworm Convergence plays right into what this deck wants to do, which is like save up for really big effects.
Yeah.
It just makes you very safe. And then also, eventually, you have like 7-8 worms. That's a lot of power. You can just win with that.
Yep. And that's the thing, too, is that it's very hard to deal with enchantments in this format. Very few cards actually do that. And this is the kind of card that just at first is like, okay, this should be okay. But then you start gaining so much free value over it, you can't even kill these people in the air, which is the big thing about that. It just ends up being a very hard situation to push through.
Okay. So the big question, how do we get there? Which is meaning, how do we get the mana in the right place that we can actually take advantage of what Joda does?
Yeah, and the big thing is that even though Joda is a Jeskai commander, it's a 5-color commander, and you need to have your green be your primary color, just because you need to be able to play cards like Drover of the Mighty, which is 1 in the green for a 1/1 human druid. It gets +2/+2 as long as you control a dinosaur, which is actually really relevant in this deck because we're playing cards like Zakama and the Tali.
Yeah, and a lot of the big creatures in the format are going to be dinosaurs right now.
Yeah, and you tap them to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. You also have a card like Atzakan Seer, which is 1 green and a white that does the same thing, makes it 2/3. But then you can actually sack this card to return a dinosaur card from your graveyard to your hand. So endgame, you very rarely find cards like a Mana Dork that end up being good for you.
Yeah, get Zakama back, cast it again, go off.
Obviously, you're going to play every single 2-mana Mana Dork, but specifically, you only want to really play the ones that can add any color to your mana pool.
Yeah, like Llanowar Elves wouldn't necessarily be good in this because if you already have the green, you don't actually need a second green. What you need is a red or a blue or something, right?
Yeah, so you'd rather take the fact that you can take a card like Channeler Initiate or Drover or Atzakan Seer to add any color to your mana pool.
Two other ramp cards you have here, Oasis Ritualist, which we talked about last episode, and I believe is actually just very good in most green decks probably in the format.
Yeah.
It's 3 and a green for a 2/4. You can tap it to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool, or you can tap it and exert it, which means it won't untap on the following turn, and in that case, you add 2 mana of any color to your mana pool. So
yeah, it's not great that it's 4 mana, but you just need to be able to add every mana color.
And 2/4, actually, again, in this format, is not the worst. It can block stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other card is Hour of Promise, which is 4 and a green for a sorcery. You search your library for up to 2 land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, and then if you control 3 or more deserts, you create 2/2 zombies.
Yeah, so that zombie part is never happening with this card. The only reason it's in the deck, and it's not a great option, again, at 5 mana, but it will get any 2 land cards out of your deck. So if you're in a pinch, Hour of Promise is going to dig you out of it because you can get 2 of the duels.
2 non-basics,
non-basics,
right?
Yeah. And that's really the only reason it's in here because...
Well, actually, if you think about it, we play Explosive Vegetation,
mm-hmm.
which is 3 and a green. This is one mana more in a format that is ostensibly less powerful.
And a little bit slower.
I think it's totally fine and actually pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you want to have ramp things. But here's the thing. In an ideal game, you want Yoda to come out in turn four. Maybe even turn three. But you're not going to always get there. And a lot of times, you're just going to find like, dang it, I don't have this color. I don't have even enough of these mandrakes to make that color. So anything that allows you to do that is just going to be very powerful.
And eventually, you want to be able to activate Yoda twice. So even later in the game, just getting a couple extra lands is not the worst thing.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So,
And then the last ramp card that we're going to talk about is Grow from the Ashes, which is 2 and a green for a sorcery with kicker 2. You search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. If the spell was kicked, instead search your library for 2 basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Notably, the lands do not come in tapped. That's really important because this spell essentially costs 2 mana, 1 and a blue.
3 mana.
Well, it's 2 and a blue, but you get a land untapped, so you get a mana green, back. Yeah. Normally when you play, you know, a card that...
Like, I was thinking of it when it was kicked.
Yeah, now when you're kicking it, then that's awesome.
I actually think this is probably Commander playable because, like I said, Explosive Vegetation is a card we see a lot that cost 3 and a green. This is if you kick it, 4 and a green, but you get 2 lands untapped, so it's closer to Sky Shroud Claim.
Yeah, very powerful. The fact that it gets basics is the only reason you're really running basics in this deck, but I do like Grow from Ashes a lot. I think it's subtly very powerful. Again, whenever we play Commander, whenever we play these formats, we always tell people to look out for text like this, where if it doesn't say the words tapped on it, or if it doesn't say the word basic, you know, you're always looking for those sorts of things when it comes to these cards, and that's going to boost their value, especially in the long run of the game.
I think a good way to look at cards in Brawl too for multiplayer is to think of their Commander analog, and then be like, how close is it? And if it's close, it's probably to like staple or Commander playable cards like Explosive Vegetation.
Yeah,
it's just that but one more mana. That's good. Now, these are better. One of them finds any 2 lands, doesn't have to be basics, and the other one puts them into play on tap. So it kind of evens out that extra cost and makes it, this is format's Explosive Vegetation.
And it works out really well. Now, obviously, you're not always going to be able to win the game just by playing these giant creatures. Sometimes you're just not going to get there. So one of the big important things in this deck is also being able to be a little sneaky, to add a little surprise to your element, because otherwise it's going to be pretty obvious. Pass the turn to you, Jimmy. What are you going to do? Play a 5-mana spell that should not cost 5 mana. But there are a couple of things that both help in different ways. And these actually are 2 cards that work really well in combination, but are also helping you out fix your mana.
This card's insane. I want to play it in Commander really bad.
Me too. I can't just imagine playing in Commander and just cackling.
So it's Brass's Bounty. 6 and a red for a sorcery. For each land you control, create a treasure artifact token. Treasures obviously are artifacts you can sacrifice to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So good in this deck because, for one...
you can play it for 5 mana instead of 7.
For 2... mana of any color, so you use all those treasures to automatically activate Yoda's ability, or I don't know what to call it. It's not really activating his ability. Use his ability.
Use Yoda to his maximum potential.
Yeah. And, you know, there's going to be points in the game where you just have 13, 14 mana. Again, these games do tend to go long in multiplayer, which means for 5 mana, you get 13 more mana or something, right?
Yeah.
And you still have your other 8 mana, so you can turn your, you know, 12 or 13 mana into 22.
Yeah, Brass's Bounty gets out of control the later it goes in the game. And in general, if you're able to play it with Yoda and you just need the ability to just make more lands, it's great. You know, even at 7 mana by itself, it's great because it means you're getting probably about 7 treasure tokens. And then the card that pairs really well with it, but is also good in a format, I think, that is going to have a lot of creature removal and creatures dying, is Revel in Riches, 4 and a black. Enchantment, whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token. You can sacrifice to add one mana of any color. But at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 10 or more treasures, you win the game. I don't think there's Vandal Blast in the format. I don't think
there's
much enchantment removal.
There's definitely not mass enchantment removal. And there's like Release the Gremlins and some other
for artifacts,
artifact stuff. So they could maybe get rid of your tokens. And there's like Rivers Rebuke to all non-land permanent stuff. But there's not a lot. It's definitely not like Commander where every deck's packing like 5 or 6 of those.
Yeah.
In Brawl, I think a deck's probably lucky to have 2 effects that do that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that if it's just one of those things where it's like And I saw in this last game,
there's less tutors.
Less tutors. If I had this combo out, that would have been a way to have actually beaten the Muldrotha deck, which is like kind of slip past it and say, like, I don't care about your win condition, how you're going to win the game, because I can't beat you on the value wise. I'm going to have to beat you with a card that says you win the game on it.
Yeah, and the Muldrotha deck would be sitting there being like, if I can't remove the enchantment or all of the artifacts, I can't do it. And then, I think that's really interesting.
And it also gives you the freedom to start attacking into the Muldrotha player, because then they don't want to block because they're going to make you more treasures. So it just makes everything around the table a little tricky. And a board wipe, oh my gosh, you sometimes just win the game.
Yeah. It can be in a position where you don't want a board wipe to happen. You play that so that it'll deter them because you're like, well, if you board wipe, I win.
Yep.
This next one's interesting. I asked you about it and you had a good answer of why it's in there. So it's Samut, Voice of Dissent, 3 red and green for a 3/4 legendary human warrior, flash, double strike, vigilance, and haste. Other creatures you control have haste, plus you can pay a white and tap Samut to untap another target creature.
Yeah.
Samut just does it all.
Samut does it all. By herself, she just comes in and smacks you for 6 with vigilance and haste and double strike and flash, so she can come in out of nowhere.
She can actually come in, eat one of your opponent's creatures, and then smack him for 6. Yeah.
And I think the big thing about this deck is that it's kind of like a glass cannon. It's very explosive, but if it gets stopped, then it takes a lot of time to rebuild sometimes and figure it out. And so being able to give other creatures haste is really the most important part of Samut for me, because being able to have Samut out and then as a comma is very, you know, obviously big game. And any of the other major, huge, like Atali, other creatures in this deck that are just giant beaters, sometimes that's how you're going to be able to kill someone with those creatures. And there's actually another card in Dominaria that I didn't put in here that is does the same thing. It's Garna the Blood Flame. And I think you play that if your meta has a lot of board wipes, because you can get a lot of cards back to your hand as well. Mm-hmm. But I like Samut just because it has flash on it as well, and so does Garna, but you can just hit someone for a ton of damage.
I don't think this format's going to have a lot of board wipes. There just aren't that many options. I mean, white has a bunch, but nobody else really does.
Yeah,
so,
that's about it. This next category is called Yoda Makes It Cheaper, or Yoda Makes It Cheaper, but this is still a great deal without him. So these are just cards that I think are over 5 mana, which is sort of the Yoda limit. So these cards are all 6 CMC. And if you play them, it's like, okay, you could have gotten a 1-mana discount, but at the same time, you kind of don't really care about that 1-mana because this card's value is insane. So
you're fine if you pay it full price, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Saheeli's Artistry is the first one. 4 blue-blue for a sorcery. Choose one or both. Create a token that's a copy of target artifact and or create a token that's a copy of target creature, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. So Kaladesh and Aether Revolt are in the format. There are a ton of artifact creatures running around. Noxious Gearhulk, probably going to be one of the more played cards in the format. This gets you 2 of them for 6 mana.
Super good. Also, there's just going to be a lot of artifacts. Like, you might just want
a Gilded Lotus.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not?
I'll take a Gilded Lotus and the best creature on the board. That seems good for 6 mana.
Yeah, pretty darn good. You don't actually care about paying the 5 with Yoda. And the fact that you have every color, again, just lets you do it.
This card did some work on game nights. Well, so did Saheeli's Artistry. it's Karn's Temporal Sundering. It's 4 blue-blue for a legendary sorcery. Now, what legendary sorcery means is that you must have either a legendary creature or a planeswalker on the battlefield in order to cast the spell. There's been a lot of questions from people. So to clarify, a legendary sorcery, if you copied it, forked it, somehow got 2 copies of it on the stack at the same time, they don't work like legendary creatures on the battlefield. They would both resolve. Mm-hmm. Legendary rule only applies to things permanents on the battlefield. So 2 Karn's Temporal Sunderings can happen at the same time if you forked it, Insidious Willed it, or whatever. And what it does is target player takes an extra turn after this one and return up to 1 target non-land permanent to its owner's control. And then you exile Karn's Temporal Sundering. So there's no shenanigans with Scribe of the Mindful on this one.
I mean, that's ridiculous, though. You get to bounce something, too, randomly, and it's get an extra turn?
I mean, they just put an unsummon onto Time Warp, yeah.
For 1 extra mana.
This card's ridiculous.
Yeah, I could see this being a very important card in even like the Take All the Turns decks.
Yeah.
Because they're playing Part the Water Veil and stuff, which requires a lot of mana. Yeah, I think it's really powerful, obviously. They don't really care if it goes to the graveyard. And taking extra turns is usually pretty good when you have 9/9s on the board or Nicol Bolas's and you're able to activate them twice. So that's really what it is. Playing huge stuff. This seals the deal, kind of.
If you didn't see Game Nights, well, turn off the podcast really quickly because I'm about to spoil something. But Jimmy had a turn where he literally went Zakama, untop all his lands, Rishkar's Expertise to draw 9 cards because he had Zakama, off the Rishar's expertise, play Vizier of Many Faces, copying Zakama, untap all his lands, then play Karn's Temporal Sundering, take an extra turn.
And then the next turn,
and then the next turn, Nicol Bolas. So his turn, was that five or six?
That was five.
His turn six. Five was Zakama, draw nine, take an extra turn, bounce my commander, and then Nicol Bolas.
Yeah.
All in turn five. Well, that's better than turn three Ugin, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely better than turn three Ugin. You have multiple threats that have to be dealt with immediately. Otherwise, people are just all going to die.
That was ridiculous.
And then I didn't win the game. Amazing. that's the craziness of this format.
I always tell people, and that should be a good lesson, which is that no matter how far somebody is ahead, if the rest of the table, and it's three players or more, team up against that person, you always have a chance because three cards drawn by your opponents to your one, three land drops to your one. That's
three people working in tandem to your one. That's the big thing too. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
All right, the last card that I'm going to talk about, where it's still a great deal, is Sunbird's Invocation, five and a red. Whenever you cast a spell from your hand, it's an enchantment, reveal the top X cards of your library, where X is that spell's converted mana cost. You may cast a card revealed this way with converted mana cost X or less without paying its mana cost, but the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So
it's kind of cascade-ish.
It's cascade-ish, and again, you're paying five mana with Yoda's ability to play an 8-drop or a 9-drop. So you're going to look at the top 9 cards of your library and definitely be able to cast something, sometimes an even bigger monster. So this is another way, for instance, that I could have gone off with Yoda in that extra turn, is just start to string spells into each other.
Yeah, it's really like a lot of value.
It's any card. You can cast a Karn's Temporal Sundering off it. There's basically, it's very hard to get around that. And I had, you know, again, you saw this in Game Nights. This card ended up doing a lot of work towards the end because I needed to keep up in value with Josh's deck. And while it got me a ton of value, it still wasn't enough, but it was
close.
A lot of value, yeah. It was very
close. I actually
think
it was ahead, except for River's Rebuke.
Yeah.
Like, you were actually getting a little more value than I was at that point, but the problem was River's Rebuke.
River's Rebuke, yeah. Otherwise, that Sandworm Convergence would have kept going, and then at that point, it's just like, all right, who can, you know, how can you get past a wall like that?
All right. I like the name of this next category. Safety first. It's all well and good to have huge, you know, 9 CMC spells you want to cast, but don't forget the basics. Don't forget you also want to be able to protect your board. And this new one, I think, is going to become a commander card we see a lot of.
It did a lot of work.
It's very good. So it's Shalai, Voice of Plenty. It's 3 and a white for a 3/4 flyer, legendary creature, angel. Planeswalkers you control and other creatures you control have hexproof. Basically, it requires your opponent to get rid of Shalai before they pinpoint remove any of your stuff. I guess your artifacts and enchantments are still fair game. Mm-hmm. Also has a secondary ability, 4 green-green, and put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control. And you don't tap Shalai or anything, so if you have 12 mana, you can do that twice.
Right.
18 three times, blah, blah, blah. Shalai is just a really good insurance policy, being like, okay, I'm going to put that out. I'm hexproof. My planeswalkers and my creatures are hexproof. So if you were planning to do like one thing to me, you're going to have to be able to get rid of Shalai and then do it.
Yeah, and we saw that this affected River's Rebuke quite a bit because it turned the card off until Josh could remove that card, specifically Shalai. And the 4 green-green in a lot of creature-based decks is going to be very powerful. In here, it's just one of those additional things. You're going to have a lot of mana on the battlefield after a while. You could just start making everything bigger and find a way to win through just that. Because Jodo himself being a 4/3 and Shalai being a 3/4 flyer, like, that's a lot of damage too.
Also, like, you're going to have big threats and they might have a removal spell. You play Shalai and it's like, suddenly, crap, I got to get rid of Shalai before I get rid of Zakama. And that might just be enough time that they can't.
And how many decks can play multiple removal spells out of their deck
turn? We also need a ton of mana to do two things, so not everybody will be able to do it. Shalai is just very, very good. I just think it's a really good card. And just you randomly having Hexproof, so powerful. We saw that Ben had Aetherflux Reservoir in that game, had the ability to give above 50 life, but he realized, oh, well, 2/3 of my opponents are Hexproof, so it doesn't do anything against
them. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Pretty interesting.
He got so close.
Yeah. I think he would have had a chance to win if you guys didn't have Shalai's, because he could have got above 50 life and then sat there being like, if anybody comes at me, you're dead.
Yeah, it's true.
And then we have to go at each other first, and he can just... He would have had a real chance anyway. Yeah. All right. The next one in the safety first category
is Primeval's Glorious Rebirth.
Oh my God, this card. In this deck.
In this deck specifically.
If you haven't noticed that, like, most of the stuff is legendary.
Yeah. And this card is...
Why not?
It's Yoda wants to cast legendary things. Of course they're going to cost more mana. This is 5, a white, and a black for a legendary sorcery. So again, you can only cast this if you control a legendary creature or planeswalker. Return all legendary permanent cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this deck runs some legendary enchantments. This deck runs a lot of legendary creatures. And this also runs legendary permanents like planeswalkers. So this is basically... every legendary permanent from your graveyard to the battlefield for 7 mana with Yoda only costs 5. And that's why you want to play a card like Samut in this deck. Because imagine bringing back, you know, your Atali's, Sakamas, and Samut, because she's legendary, and then they all have haste, and you can turn at someone.
Actually, she's got vigilance, so it's
yeah,
like that.
It's like this.
Yeah.
Well, some people are doing this.
So it's like this.
Yeah. It's like this guy's swerving his car.
It's Samut drift.
Yeah.
That card... for 5 mana is insane, because you really, even if you just get one thing, one Nicol Bolas,
yeah,
you still cast a 5 mana Nicol Bolas.
And the thing about this deck is, again, the reason you have an entire protection category is that people are going to be going after your permanents a lot. They're pretty powerful.
The next one is, it's kind of a staple in Commander now, yeah, and so you know it's good in Brawl. It's Heroic Intervention, 1 in a green and an instant. Permanents you control gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. Great to save one thing, great to save all your stuff.
And finally, in the Legendary Protector Stuff category, it's Yawgmoth's Vile Offering, 4 and a black for a legendary sorcery. Incredible art. So again, you can only cast this if you control a legendary creature. Yeah, or a planeswalker.
He did, Noah did all of the legendary sorceries.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of similar and all, like, the art's incredible on all of them.
These are all the original Elder Dragons, I think.
And you can see they're all sort of laid out similarly with a figure sort of in the middle,
mm-hmm,
and a landscape. Karn's temporal, whatever, Sundering, is crazy.
Yeah, that art is amazing.
Yeah.
So this legendary sorcery for 4 in the black says, put up to 1 target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control and destroy up to 1 target creature or planeswalker and exile this legendary sorcery. So.
This is going to become a commander staple too.
Yeah.
Yeah, regrow something from any graveyard.
Including planeswalkers.
And destroy something.
Yeah, and you can destroy a planeswalker. Yeah. So again, not many effects that can kill planeswalkers in this format, and not many effects that's going to grab something out of your opponent's graveyard. And again, if you're playing ridiculous powered cards in other opponent's decks, I want a Muldrotha if it's in someone's deck. I want this. I want X. Give it to me, please.
Give it to me. Okay. I'm going to read the next one.
Oh, yes. So this is removal category.
Is this removal? I guess it does remove stuff.
It does remove stuff.
I don't know if it counts in the removal category.
I'm counting it.
It's a saga. It's called Fall of the Thrawn. It's 5 and a white. Sagas are enchantments, and they're also historic, but they're not legendary, which is confusing. We kind of messed that up on game nights. So when it comes in, if you recall, as sagas enter and after you your draw step, you add a lore counter. And each step along the way, 1, 2, and 3, which are kind of like chapters of the saga... something happens. At chapter 1, when it comes in, destroy all lands. So 6 mana, Armageddon. But then it sits there, and on chapter 2, after your draw step, it says each player returns 2 land cards from their graveyard to the battlefield. And then on chapter 3, same thing. You get 2 more lands. Each player gets 2 more lands. And then once you hit 3, you sacrifice it. So everybody will have 4 lands after 3 turns of this, right?
Yeah.
Destroy all lands. Do it twice. I mean, this is a deck that will place like a couple of huge things early, and then it'll want to do the classic thing, which is like, then I want to stop the game, right? Pause it right where we are.
And just let me dominate at this
point. Yeah, so you just get rid of everybody's lands, and now like, well, if you couldn't handle Sagama and Nicol Bolas or whatever, Sandworn Convergence and Nicol Bolas with all your lands, you'd think of how long it's going to be until you can handle those things once I blow up all your lands.
Yeah, and even though you do get 2 lands back each turn, if you think about it, Yoda costs 4, so by the second or third chapter, you're going to have enough mana to recast Yoda if you need to. But also, you can just drop a land on that turn, and then you're able to use Yoda's ability again. So you're actually in a good spot to use the 4 mana that you get back from this card eventually, much better than I think other players are necessarily. All right, our next piece of removal is Profane Procession. This is totally a Joss Lee Kwai card.
Yeah.
Considering value. You run all the terminates. You run all of the Utter and Exiles cards. Yeah. For 1 white and a black, you have a legendary enchantment. By the way, this comes back with Primeval's Glorious Rebirth,
yep.
I think.
Yep. You did that.
Yep.
And then used it again.
Yep. 3 white and a black, activate ability, exile target creature. Then if there are 3 or more cards exiled with Profane Procession, you can flip it into Tomb of the Dusk Rose. Tap it to add one mana of any color to your mana pool, and you can pay two, a white and a black, to tap it and add put a creature card exiled with this permanent onto the battlefield under your control. So you can buy back those creatures, or you can just leave them permanently exiled, which I would have wanted to have done with the Moldrotha deck, for example.
Yeah, it's a reusable exile creature card that then allows you to start casting those on your side of the battlefield. Cards bonkers.
Yeah, very good. Obviously, you're going to have a lot of mana. This you're very rarely going to try and do this twice in a turn. Just being able to hold up Threat of Activation too. Yeah, no. I did a lot of things.
I think you're going to do it more than you think because, again, the format is kind of slow. It's prone to a lot of sort of standoffs and muddying up and people having trouble breaking through. And that's a situation where Profane Procession is just great.
And you just get some of those cards back as well, which is pretty important. The last piece of removal I'll talk about is the only board wipe that the deck runs outside of Fall of the Thran. And I think I made a mistake here. I think I should have ran more, being in white. Urza's Ruinous Blast, 4 and a white, legendary sorcery. Exile all non-land permanents that aren't legendary. So exiling all non-land permanents that aren't legendary.
Exiles.
Yeah, that's very important, obviously, in the format. And again, most of your cards here are legendary. So.
Yeah, you're going to come out on top. Even if people keep their commander, a lot of it's going to go away.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so the last category.
You made an interesting category. Yeah. I like it.
And this is specifically about Brawl. These are cards that are in this deck that I think every single Brawl deck should run if they can. So in general, I think if you're like looking for a slot to fill, look at some of these cards. And if your deck can play it, you should be playing it. The first we talked about in the Moldrotha episode is Vizier of Many Faces. 2 blue-blue. It's a clone. It comes in the battlefield as a copy of any creature. And then it's got an embalm cost, so from the graveyard, you can pay 3 blue-blue to do it again. So if you're playing blue, you should play this card.
Yeah.
Just straight up.
It's tons of value. It's really great.
It's absurd value.
The next one is Gilded Lotus. I think you can pretty much say if a card is a format staple in Commander, you should play it in Brawl, because it's just going to be of a very high power level.
Very few decks, I think, specific decks won't want Gilded Lotus, but in general, it's a great card.
I can't think of 1v1 decks, maybe not, because it's a little slower, but a multiplayer deck definitely wants it.
There's also Mirage Mirror, and this deck, I think this is more meta-dependent, but at the same time, I mean, look at what my deck is playing. It's a 3 mana. You can pay 2 mana to make Mirage Mirror a copy of target artifact, creature, enchantment, or land until end of turn. So just the flexibility here, being able to, again, you're limited by your colors and your card pool. Why not play a card like Mirage Mirror that lets you expand into everyone else's card pool as a result? If you can do it, you should play it.
Treasure Map is 2 mana for an artifact. You pay 1 and scry 1. And then you put a landmark counter on Treasure Map. And then when it has 3 landmark counters on it, so once you've scryed with it 3 times, you flip it over, and it becomes a land that you can tap and either get mana or sacrifice a treasure to draw a card. So what it does is it eventually just draws you 3 cards.
Yeah, because it makes 3 mana. Or makes 3 treasures.
Although you have other ways to make treasure in this deck, and also you might want to use the treasure to cast the spell with Jota or whatever if you were cramped on mana. So it wouldn't just be to draw the cards.
And you're getting a little bit of card advantage by being able to scry one off of this. I think a 2-mana artifact isn't a huge cost to many decks. Obviously, I think Evolving Wilds is just one of those cards that every deck will play because you're going to want that.
If you're 3 or more colors, I think.
Yeah. And then this one.
This card, absolutely every deck should play. It's Field of Ruin. It's a land. It taps for diamond or colorless mana. Also, you can pay 2, tap, and sacrifice the Field of Ruin, and then destroy target non-basic land in opponent controls. And then each player searches his or her library for a basic land card, puts it on the battlefield, and then shuffles his or her library. Now, that last part's not good for you, because you sacrifice your Field of Ruin and blow up, say, Craig's land. So you both lost a land. Then everybody goes and finds land, which means the other 2 players that didn't get affected just are up a land on you guys. At the same time, this is a format that has functional
Gaia's Cradle.
Gaia's Cradle, functional Tolarian Academy.
There's Profane Procession.
Profane Procession flips into a land. Treasure Map flips into a land. The Jota deck, if you're playing against it, you may want to just blow up because you notice they only have 1 land that taps for white or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just super, super necessary to have this kind of effect in your deck. And so you are willing to pay the price. We saw on game nights, like, I used it, and it was super effective to get rid of the Tomb of the Duskrows. Mm-hmm. And what other card did I have in my deck that could do that?
Yeah, exactly. And that card was about to get bonkers.
Yeah.
So if I could go back and change anything about this deck, looking back at it now, I think I would build in a little more card draw early on. Now, in this deck, there are a lot of cyclers because you obviously, like a card like Lay Claim costs 7 mana, but sometimes you just need to cycle it away to get another card.
That's another sweet card in the format.
Yeah. And I think I'd definitely put in more board wipes, but specifically, and I think everyone should be doing this now, is more graveyard hate, because if this format does take off, I think a lot of people are going to build Modrotha decks.
Definitely in the first, while Dominaria is the newest set.
Yeah.
And maybe, depending on what's the next thing, M19? When M19 comes out, you know, you'll look at the legendary creatures, because those are going to be the decks people build at that moment. And maybe then you can kind of throttle back a little on your graveyard hate. I would play Silent Gravestone in almost every deck. It's just so low impact for you to do it. And also, what's the land? The Scavenging Grounds or whatever?
Yeah.
I think this deck would maybe have trouble running it because it needs to hit its colors. But most decks could run Scavenging Grounds and not impact their deck much.
Okay, let's spend a little bit of time talking about the mana base of the deck. Now, it was really interesting for me to try and build this because you're essentially incentivized to use every single dual land that you can, but some are a lot better than the others, and you have to still have limited land slots to play your Field of Ruin, as well as at least one of every basic, because you have an Evolving Wild, as well as Our Promise.
Growth from the Ashes.
Yeah. So when I was looking through, there's a very good interaction between the check lands of the deck, which is cards that say Woodland Cemetery enters the battlefield unless you control a swamp or a forest. And then the Amonkhet cycle lands, like Scattered Groves and Irrigated Farmland, that you can cycle away for two, but also have Plains Island in the subtext, which means cards like Rootbound Crag, Woodland Cemetery can come into play untapped, which can be really important if you're trying to play Jodah on turn four.
You're definitely not going to be able to do crazy stuff like play Jodah on four and then play Zakama on five if you can't get at least a couple of lands coming to play untapped.
Yeah, and you don't want, again, anything that can help your lands come into play untapped, which is great. So again, the Amonkhet cycle lands are awesome. Yeah, I mean, you're going to play as many of those as you can, as well as these check lands. And you want to play them because they have the potential to come into play untapped. And you want at least all your basics for the Evolving Wilds, and then the cycle lands are on top of that. And that's basically based on what the composition of your deck's going to be looking like. You want more green than anything else. So it's tough. It's tough to make it work. I may have not done the mana base perfectly in this deck. I think I got pretty close. But at the same time, it's one of those things where I'd have to goldfish it a lot more times to really know if I nailed it down. But there is a small percentage chance that you're not going to be able to make it on time.
Yeah, so. I think that's the risk with this deck, is really just the mana base. It's going to be slightly sketchy. It's not horrible, but yeah, it's slightly sketchy. I think the dual-colored cycle lands, if you're playing the colors, you play those lands.
Yes.
They're so good. And the deserts, the single-color cycle lands. Now, Yoda is a different case here because of the necessity of the mana base. But in every other deck, I think the desert cycle lands are also, like, must play.
Cycling is just one of the most efficient things to put on a card that gives it so much extra value and very rarely takes away from the power level of the actual card. So.
Yeah.
All right. To the listeners, what do you guys think of Yoda, our great green wizard over here?
Think of me, what do you?
Obviously, he has ridiculous potential in EDH, but he seems like, by far, outside of maybe Animar, the most obvious remove on-site commander that I can think of. Just because you can play Omniscience
with
this guy. And so,
Omniscience on turn five.
That's turn four.
True.
And Commander probably Commander. Turn three, maybe. Could you get this guy on two?
Let's see, what'd you have to do?
Turn one Sol Ring.
Into a signet.
Yeah, turn two. You can have turn two Jodah.
Yeah.
So you can turn three with Jodah.
It's possible. Difficult, but possible.
Difficult, but possible. So a lot of potential. Let us know if you've brewed anything for Commander with this card, or if you've done anything for Brawl. If you think that maybe it is a little too greedy, let us know. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say.
And if you want to pick up Jodah or any of these awesome cards like Zakama you probably want. You want Zakama.
Who doesn't want Zakama?
Zakama's so good.
I was doing Spell Slinging in Seattle, and we were giving boosters away to people that played us. I gave a booster away to a listener to the show, and he came back and he showed me a foil Zakama.
Oh, so sick.
That was sick. I was very happy that happened.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
If you want a foil Zakama, you're probably not going to open it in a booster pack, but you can order it online at cardkingdom.com/commandzone if you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic products, singles, anything to do with the game. You know you're going to get that stuff anyway. Use the affiliate link. When you do, you'll be supporting this show, Game Nights, all of our content.
That's right. And also buy some Ultra Pro product while you're on that website or at your local LGS. Buying Ultra Pro does support the show. They have their new Eclipse sleeves. Obviously, with Brawl, you don't need 100, but for your Commander decks, you do. I love these sleeves. I take them to draft with me. I still have the same draft set I've been playing with for almost half a year now. They're a little dirty and a little scuffed up, but they do the job.
They definitely don't. They don't split. I don't think I've split.
I've never split
a single
one of these.
Eclipse sleeve. Yeah. Sometimes you have to sort of wipe them down. Like, but all sleeves are like that after you've played with them for like 6 to 9 months. Yeah. I switched over to Eclipse sleeves almost a year ago now, and I don't think I've replaced a single sleeve in that time. It's crazy.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. So, Ultra Pro doing a good job. Okay. Now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. You know, recently on Twitter, Jimmy, we were talking about a movie that we'd both seen. It's
a little
bit old at this point, but A Quiet Place.
Yeah. John Krasinski.
John Krasinski directed, and was he one of the writers too?
Yeah, I think so.
And Emily Blunt, his wife, obviously, in the movie. If you haven't seen it, the premise is that there are monsters in the world and they hunt by sound, so the only way to survive is to be as quiet as possible at all times.
And this is going to be loud enough to get them. Right there, probably.
Yeah. Basically, if you drop like a glass on the floor, you're going to get eaten by a monster.
If not, it's going to run exactly to where you are and try and figure out where you are.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen the movie, you might want to tune out now because we don't want to ruin anything, but we're going to talk about it a little bit because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, honestly. I think, and I said this on Twitter as well, the reason that Jordan Peele did such a good job with Get Out, as also being a fellow comedian, because John Krasinski is a comedian, obviously, from The Office as Jim, is that comedy and horror share a lot of the same important elements, which is timing, knowing how to build inside the world that they're in, you know, building on, you know, because a lot of comedy is
context,
self-referential, and so is a lot of good horror.
Well, comedy is a lot about context.
Yeah, and I think the timing and also just the ability to know how to land something at the right time, and a lot of horror has those elements.
Well, I think both things are about expectation and context. So
yeah.
Think of how often comedy is repetition of something previously, but it's the expectation, it hits you when you're not ready for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you're expecting something and it skews the other way and gets you because you're thinking, oh, they're going to repeat something or do something they already did, and then boom. And horror kind of works in the same way. So I really like that point. Similar skill set, right?
Yeah, similar skill set. And I just think that, you know, if there are more great actors that can become great directors, I'm all about it. Because I think that's a really fun way to revitalize the horror genre, and it's obviously horror is going to be here forever, but I think Get Out and A Quiet Place are both great examples of movies that took a format and were like, hey, let's mess around a little bit, let's make something that's really fun as well as enjoyable.
Yeah, the kids, you said this too, the kids were really good.
They were great. Oh
my
gosh.
Be dicey in movies. And you know, they're young kids. Sometimes it's 6, 7, 8 years old, you know, and if you just choose the wrong one and it kind of breaks the believability, it can really ruin the movie.
Yeah. Turns out one of the actors, one of John Krasinski and Emily Blunt's daughters, is deaf in the show and is actually deaf in real life as well.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, yeah. The daughter is actually really deaf. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought there were some pretty big holes. My willful suspension of disbelief was tested.
Yeah. And I think that's the main complaint that people have, which is like the universe wasn't that fleshed out, so that things that happen, you're just like, it was like, oh, we're watching a movie, right?
Yeah, and they went out of their way to make the characters like sort of have cleverly come up with all these things.
Yeah.
But then you're thinking, well, like, then why aren't they doing the obvious things? Like, if you're going to do that and your characters have obviously lived in this world where they have to be silent, and so they've thought of these things, like, we have to make paths of sand everywhere because sand is quiet to walk on, and we're going to play Monopoly, but we're going to use, like, you know, we're going to put little mitten things on everything so that it's silent when we move the pieces around, and we're going to build, you know, a crib and a thing and silent proof the walls. And it's like, okay, but you didn't think of the obvious thing, which is the inverse of your strategy. Instead of living in a silent world, can you make the world so loud that the monsters have trouble locating you specifically? And that kind of, like, the whole time I was like, that's not what I would do.
Well, because there's a scene where they go to a place that is loud and they're like yelling, being like, look, it's safe here. It masks the noise. And it's like, oh.
They go by a waterfall.
It's like a great place to settle down.
Yeah. Oh, so I got an idea. Why not move next to the waterfall? Yeah. And I was just that, not just the waterfall itself, but I was just thinking, like, and they even use it later. Like, they use a distraction of a lot of noise on the thing. It's like, well, if that works, if that's a strategy, then I got news for you.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, it is really good still, and I would recommend it. If you can just sort of put that part of it out of your mind, I think.
Enjoy the movie for the movie's sake, as well as Emily Blunt just killing it, as always.
She's so good. She's great.
And she's incredible.
Krasinski's really good, too. What was the Benghazi movie he was in?
I don't know, but he's jacked in that movie. That's all I remember.
And he's really good in it, too. Yeah. 13 Hours?
13 Hours.
Yeah. And that was the movie where I was like, oh, man, that boy can act. Yeah. Like, yeah, he's not just...
They both can act.
You know, I've just been, a pretty space.
I've been
pretty
the space. Biggest fan of Emily Blunt for the longest time.
Emily Blunt's been killing it for a long time.
She's just incredible.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
You know who else is incredible?
Oh my gosh. Wait, is it because we always end the end step with a freaking compliment? So it's just like nice and easy to just go right into it.
And also played in our Brawl episode of Game Nights, Ben Bateman from the Masters of Modern podcast.
That's right.
He is on that show with our good friend Alex Kessler. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast and also right next to us at collected.company.
The person that edits this show is Craig Blanchett, replacing Terry Robertson, who has now moved on to Game Nights. Thank you guys for your hard work. And if you want to see that hard work, you can go ahead and go to youtube.com/the Command Zone podcast to watch our faces and the cards fly up on screen. Great for deck text because, you know, we read the cards kind of fast sometimes, but you can sit there and read the card and process what we're saying. Think of your own strategies as well while you're going along. Write a little note to us in the comment section below, all that good stuff. So head on over to youtube.com/the Command Zone podcast. And thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations at the beginning and end. His Twitter handle is livingcardsmtg.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And hope you play some Brawl soon.
And we'll be back to Commander next week.
Bye.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.